Welcome to Conscious Communication, the podcast that can help you improve your company's culture and better your team's communication, helping you build more significant relationships. Now here's your host, Philip Bogolub.
I have the privilege and honor of talking with Amanda Harris. Amanda specializes in working with people with chronic back pain and discomfort. That is so important since we're kind of a lot of couch potatoes, right? And Amanda's company is called ReConnect. Now, let me spell that. It'll be in the show notes, but I love the name. ReKinect2. I'm assuming that has to do with kinetics.
Yes.
Okay, good. So she will help you in eliminating back pain and restore healthy movement for life. Here's the key: using gentle movement and exercise. Everybody listen, gentle movement. You need to learn how to be flexible in the body and flexible in the mind.
Yep.
She has over 30 years experience in post-rehabilitation and medical exercise. Thank you for being on the show today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. What was that serendipity? What was that accident? What was that coincidence that happened in your life that suddenly, like, you know, you didn't become this. You didn't, like, you know, 18 or 25 or whatever point in your life. I know there's a lot of things, but what kind of pushed you in this direction? Because it's a real, you know, I want people come on the show because they're making a difference. Empowering others empowers themselves. It's a spiritual thing. And it's that connection. So what made you do this? What got you there? And then you're living your dream with what you're doing.
Well, Philip, I think it did start with an accident that seemed like a pretty bad accident when I was a senior in college. I had a horse tied to a barn wall, which I had done many times in my work with him. And he tended to be sort of skittish. And I knew that he occasionally would freak out and pull loose from the wall. And usually he broke a halter, you know, the thing you put on their head to hold them, or, you know, some fittings on a rope or something. But on that particular day, the whole barn wall came down when he panicked and ran backwards. And he pinned me face down under this wall. And he got out of the way, so he wasn't injured. But I was under basically, I think, 6 stall fronts. It was a heavy wall. You know, it had heavy boards, oak boards, and cast iron fittings on it. But it, because of the way the doors were, I wasn't completely crushed. And I was covered from the shoulders down, so I was pinned. And I thought at the moment that I was by myself there, I really wasn't sure what was going to happen. But apparently during the calamity, another person had driven up to the barn and she came running. She was about my age and about my size. So she wasn't a big or enormously strong person, but she grabbed me from under the shoulders and just pulled me as hard as she could out from under that wall. We tumbled into the stall across the aisle to safety. She got the horse and took care of him. And then drove me to the emergency room, because when I first landed in the stall, when she first got me free, I couldn't even feel my legs. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, this is it. But the feeling did come back. And I was told my spine had just been stunned by the impact. And so long story short, I went to the emergency room that day. She took me to the emergency room. And the doctor basically said I was very lucky that my spine had not been broken, or, you know, I didn't have any crushed vertebrae. But he said, I was going to be hurting for a while. And so he said, you know, here's some painkillers and muscle relaxers. I want you to just stay on the couch for 2 weeks and then just resume activity. And I looked at him and, you know, I was 20 maybe. And I said, this was rural Southwestern Virginia where I was. And I said, no physical therapy. And I had just kind of gotten into this whole notion of wanting to do exercise physiology in my career. I wasn't sure what it meant yet, but I knew enough to ask about physical therapy. And he said, no, you don't need anything like that. Just take the medication. And in a couple of weeks when you're feeling better, just do whatever you want to do. So, you know, I was a compliant patient. I did exactly what he said. And I went back to teaching aerobics twice a day, 5 days a week, and riding my horse and running and doing all these crazy things. No physical therapy. So because I was young, it didn't catch up to me for a couple of years. You know, they say that, what's the saying? God first throws a pebble and then he throws a rock. And then if you're really not paying attention, he throws a boulder, right?
Right.
So I, you know, I'm in my exercise physiology degree and I'm trying to figure out where to concentrate my efforts, because you can go so many different places as an exercise physiologist. And all of my friends were going into cardiac rehab. And I was getting such good grades in cardiology that I was like, oh, well, I'll just do cardiac rehab. So I started going down that barrel, and I was, you know, attending all the classes and going to all the labs and doing rounds with cardiologists and the whole thing. And my back was starting to really kill me. Like, it was really starting to bother me. So I went and saw a doctor. The doctor sent me to a physical therapist. I'd get better. I'd go back to the gym. I'd run. I'd lift weights. And then I would start hurting again. And I would get so frustrated. And so I was in this merry-go-round of going to, and good physical therapy too. Like, I was a good physical therapy patient. I had a great therapist. And then I would go back to the gym and start doing my thing again. My back would hurt again. And so I eventually met a really talented osteopathic type physician who had a more holistic view. And he said to me, he said, okay, this is all based on your brain trying to move you in ways to protect you. So he started doing some, I mean, you could call them manipulation, but different types of therapies to really get my body moving correctly again. And then I would say, what do I do to keep this? You know, and he would look at me and sort of shake his head in disbelief. And he'd say, you're the exercise physiologist. You're supposed to know this. I was like, I have no idea. You know, this is not what they taught me in school. This is not what I learned in graduate school. This is not anything that I learned in physical therapy. And he was like, yes, but you're going to figure it out. And I remember he'd look at me and he'd go, you're going to figure this out. I was like, oh my gosh. And I tried everything, Philip. I tried so many different types of exercise. You know, before the show, we were talking about Pilates and yoga. I did all of that. In fact, I got instructor trained in so many different types of exercise. It's not even funny. But none of them were giving me this feeling that I was holding the changes he was making in my body. I felt like I couldn't continue the changes he was making in my body. I just kept falling apart and having to go back and get kind of patched back up.
Right.
And then I finally found an exercise method that my advisor in my graduate degree introduced to me. This is several years after I graduated. He called me and he said, you've got to come down here and see this. And it was an exercise method out of Norway. And these guys, they were physical therapists. They were talking about how to retrain movement patterns from the nervous system, like at the nervous system level. And I was like, hold up. This is what I've been waiting for, right? Like, I knew it had to go deeper than the muscles. Teach me. So I wound up really studying with those guys. And then I, along the way, met another osteopathic type physician. And I was telling him about this method. And he was like, oh, let's talk about the nervous system, because he had also been a neurologist. So I just had this, you can call it serendipity. I mean, you and I probably both believe the same thing about that, right? There is no coincidence.
No.
This gentleman was working with me on understanding neurology, and then I could layer all that exercise, you know, pedagogy on top of it. And it was an amazing conversation. And I started mentoring under this guy. I mean, I couldn't do the osteopathic manipulations, but I would literally stand over his shoulder and ask him questions. And I would say things like, okay, based on what you just saw in Mrs. Smith, does it make sense that I would then work on this, this, and this? And he would say yes or no. And we would have these lively discussions. It was magical. So I worked with him for almost 10 years. Mm. And through that time, I was also leveraging what I learned in that one exercise method, but also tinkering with what I could do for folks at home, because this exercise method requires all this special equipment, which I use in my office today. I still use it. I love it. But I also know that you can't take it home with you.
Right.
It's really expensive stuff. It's like $10,000 worth of equipment.
Right.
So I had to figure out a way to make it work at home. And when I really cinched it up, actually was during COVID, because I was forced to not see people in person. My husband kept saying, is there any way people could see you online? I said, they're going to want to come in. They're going to want to be on those ropes. And
right.
He finally looked at me and he goes, honey, you can't do it. You've got to see if you can do something else. And so during COVID, I did find a few intrepid souls that were willing to try Zoom sessions, and I found out that I was incredibly effective. And all I was doing, Philip, was using what I had learned from those osteopathic mentors, what I had been tinkering with in my own office and sending people home with. But since I didn't have the fancy equipment to jumpstart them, I was having to start people right there.
Right.
And it was working. And that's when I decided, okay, now I'm going to make an online course. Like, now I have the power to reach more people. And, you know, now I can see people. I have clients. I have a client in Massachusetts. I have a couple of clients in California, a client in New York. It's magical to me to be able to help so many people that can't get in here to my office. But, you know, your original question was, how did I get into it? Well, At the time, I would not have called that accident fortuitous because it was very painful.
Yes.
And the blood, sweat, and tears and banging my head against the wall when things didn't work was also incredibly painful. Like my husband would tell you, oh my gosh, those were some dark days when I would come home with back pain or I'd go into spasm and I couldn't stand up because yet another exercise method had failed. So it took a lot of years, probably the better part of 10 years, until I felt like I was on to something, right?
Yeah.
And then easily another 5 to 10 years, well, 10 years to really perfect it to the point where I was willing to actually talk about it like I am with you today. Because, right. You know, 5 years ago, I probably would have still been a little reticent. Like, I don't know that I'm ready to talk about it.
Right.
But now I've had enough success with it, with my own body and with my own clients, that I'm so excited about it because it doesn't require expensive equipment. And it doesn't require inordinate amounts of time. And it doesn't hurt. It's not like intense, crazy exercise. I'm not telling people they have to go run for 90 minutes or do pull-ups and push-ups all the time. Although, like, I enjoy strength training, but you don't have to do that to keep your back healthy. No. It's really cool. So anyway, sorry, I kept talking because I get excited.
No. I'm marking down notes all the time, but I could tell you one thing right off the top that, you know, I've been doing this for about 8 years. I was an engineer in the medical field, as you know, the audience knows all about it. And I didn't know where the path would lead me. And that instantaneous success, I don't care if it's what we're doing. I don't care if you're a big movie star. It doesn't mean anything. You know, this overnight success stuff, it's a bunch of horse hockey, you know, because, you know, you're going through a little better, a little worse, a little better. I mean, I have my immersive communication system, my mindfully immersive communication system called Ajinoi. It has to do with universal mind, spirits, spirit guides, spirit and angels, the serendipity, accident, coincidence. Then it leads to your discovery, awakening, transformation. Then it gives you your Ajinoi, which is your soul knowledge. Knowledge of your soul, your purpose of your soul. Then it gives you a new now, which creates your future. All this stuff. I'm like, I tortured one of my best friends for 8 months at the library going through this over and over again. And goes, I don't know what you're talking about. It's too philosophical. Give me more examples. What do you say? What are you talking about? I don't know. I go through over and over and over again. And you have to go, it's not an accident you would wish on anybody.
Nope.
But if you didn't do that, we wouldn't be talking today.
Well, I'd probably be some kind of a cardiac rehab technician.
Right. Just
and that's not nearly as much fun as what I'm doing now.
No. And it's an interesting, not that God's going, I'm going to make something bad happen to you.
No.
It was just these little things, these are God winks, these little things that happen that you have no idea what, and whether it's a divorce or whether you get in a car accident or whether you lose your job, fill in the blank. It's everybody's got, nobody's worse or better than whatever their story is, but you were determined to move forward. All those different things that you were going through are paths that, you know, you're getting off the highway, you go left or right, you go back on the highway and you don't know. You don't know. I'm working with somebody in Hollywood right now. It's like with the musical. I don't know, my executive producer here and writer that I've known for several years now, she knows what she's doing, but it's a very uncomfortable, not uncomfortable, stupid. I'm not like, you know, refinancing my home and I'm going broke. I'm talking about uncomfortable. I don't know. And what I like about this is when my wife started going, right after the pandemic, she started going to when the health club reopened, which I'm doing my seminars every month at now. And she's like, you got to come to this Pilates thing. I'm like, I'm stretchy. I'm fine. Goes, you've got to come. For about a year and a half now, or maybe it's about 2 years now. I'm losing track of time. There are so many things now I couldn't do, or I learned how to bend properly. You're not in flexion and extension. And I'm doing this on the video and nobody can see this, but you know, how to bend, how to pick something up. You know, we got trained when I was in the medical field because I worked out of a factory, but that's not what I'm talking about. It's being able to get, I now can bend down with my back straight and my heels don't touch. I don't care. On my knees, not on the floor, but bent down and more comfortable than bending over with my back curled. And I always wondered why I would have back pain after a while reaching over because nobody's telling you what, nobody's training you how to do these things. And just the simple thing of picking something up. My daughter, it lives out of town and she's in the military. So she came back for a visit. And she saw me bending over, just doing, putting dishes in the dishwasher and bending all the way down, pushing the, you know, the door back up from the ground up. And she goes, what are you doing? And she's an occupational therapist assistant. She did it all backwards. We paid for her college. Then she went to the military to change careers. I'm like, no, that was, the cost structure wasn't working. What did you do? But it's amazing what you don't know.
Yes.
And opening up to, you were mentioning something also, we are habit and routine machines.
Mm-hmm.
And we just, I call it the idiot box, because we get on the idiot box, the internet, or the idiot box plugged in the wall, our computer, and we talk to other idiots to confirm our idiot stuff, and we're not getting anywhere. I'm going to look for this person to do this. No, Amanda actually has a degree. She has a process. You learned everything. You heard everything. Replay it from the beginning. All that story to be able to do it. And you took advantage of the pandemic going, okay, what can I do? And your husband's like, do something. And you're like, okay. Because again, those are the things, you know, those are the yin and the yangs that you want. You want your husband, you know, I want my wife, you want your friends, your uncles, your aunt, whoever they are, to be able to tell you, you know, bop you on the head with the Three Stooges, do this, do that. But what you've learned, and I love this. I mean, we can go so many different directions. How you make a difference with people, because the Pilates stuff, you have these machines, they're super expensive. I can't afford that stuff. So she's, you know, with foam rollers, she tells me to do certain things, you know, like activating certain muscles. You know, I'm doing these bends with the foam roller. I can't describe it, but I'm doing these things to keep the flexibility in because I'm very tight in my hamstrings and all this other stuff. But I had this cracking the, and they're not muscles, but she described it better. They're like air pockets or whatever. I said, why am I, well, you're not activating your ankles. I go, what? And it's like, what do you mean activating your ankle? You need to kind of like not hold it really tight. You know, like you're flexing like Arnold Schwarzenegger for a swimsuit competition. You just need to flex, you know, activate them.
Yeah.
Mom went away. And there's so many different things. And we go to chiropractor, osteopath. When I was a kid, osteopaths used to adjust. I don't think they do that anymore. But he was a great doc. Do they still do that? Do osteopaths still adjust?
Some do, but they don't really adjust. They will mobilize stiff joints, but it's not the same as chiropractic. And so most osteopaths don't operate the same as chiropractors.
So tell me at the first time, I'm going here. One of the things I want to know, want to ask you is, because we're habit and routine machines, and because we're a little better, a little worse, a little better, a little worse, a little better, worse, it's the stick-to-itness that you've got to go. Someone's going to call you up and listen to this show saying, you know what, Amanda, I don't know if I'm in pain or not, but I have some uncomfortableness. How do you go through the analysis for people don't want to admit they're in pain. People don't want to admit they're suffering. People don't want to, and whether it's mindful or physical, they don't want to admit it because they think it's vulnerability. Mm. I don't mind certain vulnerabilities because you're opening up things to be more healthy for yourself. So how can you advise? I'm calling you up and I'm going, hey, you know what, Amanda, I listen to the show. I love this thing. I think I'm having back pain. What can I do? What kind of analysis can you do to kind of get them moving in their mind to understand it better?
Well, I think, you know, I'm going to give you this really unsatisfying answer of it depends, right?
That's true. That's true.
Because I think I would ask a whole lot of questions of that individual.
Well, give me some of the questions.
Have you seen your doctor yet? Right. So a lot of folks, if the back pain has not been bad enough, they haven't gone to see the doctor and they make some assumptions about it. And, you know, as an exercise physiologist, I'm considered allied health, allied medical, right? So the first thing I want to make sure of is there's nothing else going on because
stop. What do you mean by allied health, allied medical?
Allied medical, allied health. So I'm not considered a licensed medical provider. But I'm sort of on the fringe of that, right? Like I work with licensed medical providers. So a lot of my in-person business, most of my in-person business comes from medical providers.
Got it. I wanted to do it because I didn't know and I'm sure the audience didn't know. So thank you for clarifying.
Thank you for asking.
Absolutely.
I appreciate your asking because that's a really good question. I think a lot of people don't really know what that means, but I'm kind of like a step-down person. So physical therapists will often refer their clients to me toward the end of physical therapy or sooner if they want more exercise work done. And I say, I use exercise very loosely. My husband always says, don't use exercise because it worries people. But you know, when I say exercise, I'm basically talking about mindful movement. And so it can get challenging, but it can also just be challenging mentally and not as challenging physically. So it's not like I've got people in here sweating and, you know, breathing hard, but often, you know, you were talking about activating muscles, often finding a muscle that needs to be activated that you really haven't related to in a long time can be very challenging mentally. You know, like I have people all the time that are doing some kind of little tiny movement And they're sweating across their brow. They're like, oh my goodness, why am I feeling so hot? It's like, well, because your nervous system is having to work really hard to access this area, just hasn't done it in a while. So it's not that it's like physically challenging. It can be very mentally nervous system kind of challenging. But, you know, all that to say that, you know, I will work with folks who are in therapy, like alongside their physical therapist, if their physical therapist wants me to do that. I also work with folks that have been discharged from physical therapy. I also have some physicians that have clients that have been discharged from physical therapy years ago, and they know that they just have some movement issues and they'll just send them straight over here. So I work with a lot of like medical practitioners. And in doing that, I am also acutely aware that back pain isn't always a musculoskeletal problem, right? Like there are other reasons people can have back pain. You can have, you know, organ pain. I hate to think about that, but something as simple as a kidney stone.
Yep.
Or something more sinister that needs to be imaged. And so my first question is always, have you seen your doctor about the back pain? And often the answer is, yeah. And I've had physical therapy and I've had images done and now we're in this place. So often by the time people get to me, it's they've kind of done all the things.
Right.
And they're wondering what else can be done. And I appreciate that because I was there, right? Like I told you that story.
Right.
Where I had done all the things and I still wasn't where I wanted to be. And it was very frustrating. So it's a very frustrating place. So I do a lot of listening, trying to understand kind of where they are in the whole scheme of things. If I feel like I need to see them, we might do a brief Zoom session and I might have them do a few movements for me.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just basic movement patterns so I can get a feel for whether or not this person could be a good candidate for my work. And then if they are, I might point them to various ways that they could work with me. If they're not, then I want to give them the resources that they need to help themselves. So I might say, you know, I think what we need to do is have you go back to your doctor. Let's talk about physical therapy or, you know, any number of resources that I might be able to offer to them to point them in the right direction. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, I'm on a crusade against back pain, Philip. I don't want people to have back pain in 2024. I feel like there are enough things out there. I realize my method isn't the only thing and it's not for everybody. And I want to help point people towards the things that are going to help them the most. So at the very least, I'd love to have a conversation.
And I think that's important for people to understand. Several years ago, a man, prostate issue, I rode a bike. It affected me. Didn't understand it. This is over 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I decided in my mind, you're talking about mindfulness and we're talking about how the mind, you know, and I know that I know that only for a fact, because when we're doing the Pilates thing, I'm like, I'm sweating. And she has said that, well, you're activating things. You haven't used them either ever or in 1,000 years.
Right.
I'm like, okay. So I'm aware of it. I'm aware of, you know, like she knows that my wife can, the hamstrings, I have to bend my knees a little to have straight back. She doesn't need to. So it's, everybody's got their different things. So anyway, I had the issue. It was horrible. Any man that has gone through that is a horrible thing to do. Because you go into the bathroom, you're not emptying, blah, blah, blah. So I had that in my mind for years. And when I left my job, started the business, did all this other stuff, and got to the mindfulness and this Ajinoy and all this communication system, I realized, wait a minute. I'm telling people this. I bet you it's in my mind. And I'm terrified. I don't have a bike anymore. So my wife, about 2 years before that, she decided to get a bike. And I'm like, I want to ride with her. I feel like a 12-year-old. I want to ride with you because I enjoyed it. I'm not a big, you know, I'm not cross country. So she's like, well, what are you going to do? I said, well, you know what? They have bikes where, you know, mentally I can get my mind out of it for the men's prostate. So it's a little open in the seat. Okay, fine. And then I found out you could return the bike within a certain time. And I'm like, now I've learned, and I'm sure you agree with this. Don't go on plan B, because if you've got plan A, you're going to go straight to plan B. You're not going to stick with it. Don't do it. So I said, oh, no, I'm not going to do plan B. I'm just going to do this and it's going to work. She goes, how are you going to work? Well, I'm going to image this. I'm going to use this when I'm teaching. I'm going to use it for myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I could feel the fear when I got on the bike. I could feel it so much that my body was tense. I'm like, okay, I'm not right. Like 2 days it did this. I'm like, okay, I'm done. So I prayed and meditated. I went into the state that I go, I got a whole world and I got an ocean. I've got a river. I've got a forest. I've got imaging place. I got everything on imaging leaves. I got everything. So I went in there. I'm like, it's not happening. So I said, I'm going to bike out first and I'll meet you over near the school. So I biked out, and granted, I know I'm doing Pilates now and I'm starting to learn more about myself and the body. So I realized, okay, because our Pilates instructor said, you're going to have muscle pain, but doesn't mean anything. It's not pain. It's like you said, it's uncomfortable because you haven't used them. Mm-hmm. Well, fast forward, within two or three bike rides, that whole thing, I could hear the noise in the background going, but like, I know how to get rid of it. I know how to deal with the immersive system. I know how to get the magnetic fields to be able to retract each other from the two minds and all this other stuff. So it went away. And then suddenly I was comfortable and I wasn't. And I, you know how you say you don't forget how to ride a bike? Well, I kind of did. And the last bike I had, the speeds were on the handles. It doesn't exist anymore. So it got past, but it took time. It took one summer basically to get past it. Mm-hmm. And then the next summer it was like, suddenly, when are we going? I can't wait to start to do it again when the weather's changed. It's already, you know, it's almost March. I can't wait. As long as it's 55 degrees or more, we can put a hat on and go. But the whole thing, what you don't know, you don't know. And your mind can scare the living daylights out of you. So when you're talking about easy movements and you're talking about small movements, I want to explain to the audience what that really means, because we went to a yoga class, great yoga class. We hurt ourselves because they were moving too fast. So how do you do this? Because everybody has a different speed. There's no wrong, no right. So how do you describe that to people so they can have stick-to-itiveness? Because once you see, I believe, you talked to Amanda, once you see a little bit of progress, and I know it's different. Some people take a week, some people take 6 months. But when you see that, you're going to get hooked on it, because then you stop, it comes back. So how do you describe that gentle movement? Because people they see these videos, you know, jumping around and all this. How do you do that with people?
So I want to answer your question. And if you will humor me, first, please. I want to go back to your story briefly.
Sure.
Because that's a great story. And, you know, before we started the podcast, we were chatting a little bit. And one of the things I mentioned to you is that a lot of what I help people through is reframing what they're experiencing in their back. And that's exactly the story you told. Mm. You know, I think we have a tendency to give certain pains meaning. And usually we give that pain meaning out of fear, you know, and I have had people come to me and tell me that they had a physician or a medical professional tell them that the pain was all in their head, which is not what I'm saying here. I don't believe that. I think that's really a terrible thing to say to somebody, because I think pain is very real. It's a very physical experience. And what happens in your mind, how you explain that pain in your mind, turns into emotion. It creates an emotional response. And then whatever you're feeling gets amplified. Right. So you're doing this tensing thing. So, you know, when you give that pain, this, like, what's the scariest thing you could think of? Well, prostate cancer. Oh God, what if I have prostate cancer? Right. And then you just, every time you think about it, like you said, like, your body language gets tensed up, and now you're all tensed up and you're in this little ball. Well, if you're all tensed up and you're in a little ball, you can't sit on your bike seat correctly, nor can you pedal correctly, nor are your mechanics going to be conducive to a comfortable ride.
Right.
So everything just gets amplified. It's such a great story to illustrate exactly that. And I think for so many of us, you know, you get back pain and the first thing that starts going through your head is, oh, what does this mean? Does this mean that I can't do what I love to do anymore? Like, am I getting too old for this? Is this it? Like, do I no longer get to ride my bike? Do I no longer get to go for long hikes because my back's going to hurt? Can I no longer stand at a wedding? You know, like, you start creating all these what ifs, what ifs, what ifs. And that just creates more and more, like, emotional, you know, upheaval.
Yep.
And that added stress acts as a huge megaphone for your pain. Like, the pain goes up, right? Yeah. And I've had plenty of people tell me that when they get stressed out, their pain's worse. So I know it's true. I've experienced that.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I know it's true. But I wanted to mention that because I think one of the biggest things that I can help people through is understanding what that pain means. But I also have to understand what they know about their pain first, which is one of the reasons, going back to what I said earlier about, if you've been to the doctor, you know, have you had some images made so that I can understand where they're operating from? You know, like, do we have knowledge that this is nothing sinister? There's nothing underneath that needs to be further, you know, examined or diagnosed. Yep. This is just back pain. Okay, well then let me help you understand what back pain's saying.
Right.
You know, back pain isn't saying you're done for the rest of your life. Back pain's saying you're moving in a way that isn't good for your back. So let's solve that. So now, if you don't mind, getting back to what you asked me about easy movement. So that's where we come in with easy movement, is first understanding what back pain means, that you're not moving well, and then understanding what is keeping you from moving well. And in many cases, it's a combination of at least two things. You know, I tell people that it's either this or this, but in reality, it's usually a combination in different percentages of stiffnesses in places that need to move more. And in modern humans, that tends to be ankles. You mentioned ankles earlier, right?
Yes.
Ankles, hips, and upper backs. Why? Because so many of us are doing exactly what you and I are doing all day long, right? And I mean, I don't know that you're sitting still all day long. I'm certainly not sitting still all day long, but so many of us that are knowledge workers are sitting still. And I have a couple of clients that are therapists, like psychology therapists, mm-hmm. and they're not sitting behind computers, but they're still sitting still facing their patients, right?
That's
and so it's
right.
a similar geometry mm-hmm. that their body is in. And it's lack of movement in those areas. And that tends to get us into trouble, because when you don't move enough in especially those three areas, there are a few others, but those are the three big ones, then you're going to have to move more when you have a high demand place on you, like lifting a heavy box or moving a potted plant or changing the furniture in your living room. You're going to start moving more through vulnerable places like your back, right? And that's when we get into lifting and bending injuries. You know, you were talking earlier about how in Pilates, you've learned how to move your body in ways that you know how to lift and lower, and you know how to close the dishwasher now without putting your back at risk. And that's all beautiful, because what that method and most exercise methods will teach you along the way is how to move from your hips, right? Like, you've learned how to move from your hips, your ankles, your knees, and not your back. And so a lot of it is helping people understand where they're supposed to be moving more, and then also learning how to control the areas that they should be moving less. So a lot of folks substitute spine motion for hip motion or ankle motion.
Oh.
Right? Like,
yes.
You can't bend your ankle, so you bend your back.
Right.
Now, most people don't think about that, but
no.
When you're walking, if you have stiff ankles, you're going to move your back. If you have stiff hips, you're going to move your back. Like, your back is going to take up whatever motion that those other joints don't allow.
Right.
And so now you've created an instability in your back, or maybe you've just made an existing one worse. Because a lot of us, if we're over the age of 35, which, you know, maybe just a little bit over the age of 35, but, you know, most of us over the age of 35 have already got some what they call degenerative changes, right? The discs are starting to get smaller.
Absolutely.
So you've already got that going on. And now if you add stiff ankles, hips, and upper back to that, something as simple as walking is putting your back at risk, right?
Yes,
so,
yes.
So that's really what I mean by gentle movement and exercises, is I'm looking to resolve all of that. I'm looking to help you move better in your stiff parts, and then learn how to control your more vulnerable places, so that in general, you can do what you're talking about, open and close the dishwasher without jacking up your back, right?
Yep.
And a myriad other things, like enjoy long bike rides with your wife or whatever else you want to do. I don't necessarily train people to do their fitness stuff. I'm a huge, you know, like, fitness advocate, but I'm not going to tell you have to get, you know, you don't need to get super fit in front of me. I just want you to move better, and then you can do whatever you want with that. Once you start moving well and your back is safe, literally, then you can start adding whatever type of fitness or exercise you want. That's what's so great about it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you're right. You pick and choose, because you can do something I can't do. Now, I'm going to talk about something that, well, first of all, most men or people in general, well, women don't have a prostate, but I don't care about talking about that. I could care less. Something I learned, and it's about sitting on the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody talks about this. You don't want to talk, ooh, sitting on the toilet. I don't want to talk about that. That's a stinky talk. That's a stinky discussion. When you're sitting on the toilet, you we got the idiot box in our hands. Mm-hmm. So you're bending over. Your inflection. You're not in extension. And I had this discussion with the Pilates instructor. It's fine. She's like, good question. Mm-hmm. She goes, well, think about it. When you're sitting there eating dinner, are you curving your back? No. Right. Are you sitting there when you're driving, you're curving your back and you're reading? No. Said, well, if your back's not straight and you're because I always refer to the spine. I've been going to chiropractor since I was like, you know, 5 or 10 or whatever. Mm-hmm. The spine is like a phone pole, or I say phone pole, electrical pole for you youngins. It's if there's a break in the middle, or if it's a little bit a deterioration, after a while it could break or it could just simply stop working. So it's like, I thought about that with sitting on the toilet. Sit up straight. Don't bring any, not that I bring anything in there anyway, but I'm like, I'm sitting there and suddenly like, oh, I feel better. Because your body will react to, you know, you're in your own toilet or you're in your own bathroom. Nobody's seeing you like this. But the whole thing is you make these little tiny changes. Mm-hmm. I don't care that I reach down and, you know, she goes, make sure you have your butt out. Make sure you're doing this, you know, all the bending down I was talking about earlier. And I look ridiculous to the average person because most people just simply bend over. I'm not doing it anymore. And I really don't care. So when I go down there, and it's weird because I told her, I said, I feel comfortable in that position now. Mm-hmm. I'm okay. So when I'm vacuuming, I mean, it's simple, stupid stuff. Or here, cleaning the toilet.
Yeah, it's the everyday stuff, though, that gets us.
So I bend all the way down and I take the brush to clean the toilet and I'm bending with, you know, my knees down. I'm not on my knees and my back is straight and I get all the way up slowly, of course. And you breathe and all this other certain things you learn how to do. And I don't feel sore.
Yeah.
And I'm getting exercise and I'm reframed it going, well, I have more options now and I feel better. Because when I started biking, because she was making some suggestions, you know, always, they say always near your core. All right. I refer to it as the abs. So not like you have to go, you're looking at the 12 pack. You're just activating it a little bit.
Right.
You don't have, like you're saying, gentle movements. You know, when you breathe, people are not taught how to breathe. When I was younger, I kept pulling my shoulder out because I was a moronic idiot. Now I'm just an older moronic idiot. But I was, you know, doing the bench thing with an angle, you know, on the bench for weights. I'm not a big person. And I kept popping out. My friend was a chiropractor. She goes, you know, the old joke, if it does, you know, doc, I have pain when I go like this. Well, stop doing that. Well, I stopped doing it because I was doing it wrong. She goes, if it doesn't work for you, stop it.
Yeah.
You know, you talk to Amanda. And for the audience to understand, we're talking about imaging because we're kind of healthcare geeks. So when she's referring to imaging, she's talking about X-ray.
Yes, an MRI.
Or an MRI. So you have, you know, two-dimensional and three-dimensional and you know, all this stuff. So when she's talking about imaging, it's so important. And what I love about the conversation we're having is, no, you're not the traditional thing that we're used to hearing, but she's being recommended from those people.
Right.
And she's got not just the certificates, but she's got the experience in the background. Because, you go to physical therapy. Well, insurance or only pays it for a short period of time. And even if it didn't, you can't go forever. It's not doing anything anymore.
Right.
So she's kind of the level up. It's like, you know, she's going from yoga to Pilates type thing, or at least that's in my mind. Or from, you know, walking to biking, whatever.
Yeah, for a lot of people, it's getting them to be able to tolerate yoga again or tolerate Pilates again. So some people coming out of physical therapy can't go straight back to those disciplines. Their bodies aren't ready for them yet. And, you know, you went through your own transformation with Pilates. You realize it's a very challenging, you know, physical exercise. And I've got folks that aren't ready for that yet. And we have to really get them ready. We have to teach them how to activate their deepest abdominal muscles. So you were talking about that earlier. Breathing is one of the core tenets of my method, is learning how to breathe correctly. You mentioned that earlier too. And I think, unfortunately, you know, even though Pilates is based on breathing, often in class situations, there's not enough emphasis placed on it because the instructor is trying to keep a whole class moving, you know? Yep. And so we spend a lot of time working on breathing correctly because a lot of us modern humans do not breathe well.
No.
And that's the basis of how to use your abdominals correctly. So you know, we get all of that, you know, going. And honestly, my physical therapy colleagues, the ones that refer to me the most, will literally tell people, Amanda's going to work on your breathing. She's going to get your breathing straightened out because they don't have time to do that in 15-minute visits in the office.
No.
But they know that that's something that I can dive into and really help people correct. And so we do a whole lot of foundational things even after physical therapy, but the whole idea is to build that bridge back to normal activity, which includes, in many cases, Pilates classes, yoga classes, you know, classes at the, you know, whatever gym you like to go to.
Right.
Well as various sports and activities like biking or running or whatever else. Yeah.
Well, I want you to, I hope I'm getting the statement right. Diaphragmatic breathing. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Isn't that the stomach breathing or is that chest breathing? I always get those backwards.
So your diaphragm sits underneath your rib cage, kind of like an upside down parachute. Well, kind of like a parachute, I guess, a right side up parachute, but it sits underneath your rib cage. And it goes all the way around, right? And so when you inhale, your diaphragm contracts downward towards your abdomen, which is why it gets called belly breathing, right? Your belly actually
expands. You don't want to do belly breathing.
Well, you do, actually.
Oh, okay. Okay, please clear that up.
But when you and I are talking like normal humans, it would be weird if one of us was doing belly breathing, don't you think? Like, it would be really contrived if I was taking these really deep breaths in between everything.
I'm thinking about it now. I'm sitting here thinking about it.
Wow, you're a really interesting cat. but what I really try to help people understand is that it's a lot of times in fitness applications, it gets taught where you breathe only with the diaphragm and you don't expand the ribs, which I never really understood. Or you breathe only with the ribs and you don't worry about the belly. Or it's weird how we get parsed out. But the respiratory system, the greater respiratory system, includes the muscles in the ribs. Those are your intercostals, the muscles between the ribs that actually help flare the ribs, expand the ribs, and also contract the ribs. So that's part of your greater respiratory system. Your diaphragm is part of your greater respiratory system. And here's something crazy. Your pelvic floor, well as your deepest abdominal wall, are all part of your greater respiratory system. It's your whole canister in your trunk that helps you breathe properly. So when we're doing breath retraining for people, it's a big, contrived, weirdo breath that you would never use at a cocktail party or at church or, you know, anything like that, because people would think you were weird. But we retrain the breath with this exaggerated sort of breath, not over breathing, because I don't want people to hyperventilate, but we retrain the breath that way because I want them to feel it.
Yes.
And then what you learn is how to use your deep abdominals along with the breath.
Right.
In kind of this big contrived way, so that as the exercises become slowly more complicated, more complex, I guess, we start adding more body parts moving in the exercises, you start learning how to moderate your breath and your abdominal activation to fit the task.
Bingo.
So closing the dishwasher is going to have one level of activation. Picking up a 25-pound bag of dog food is going to have a whole other level of activation and breathing.
Yes.
So you might use a lower to moderate level breath to close the dishwasher door, whereas you might have to use a moderate to high level breathing and abdominal strategy to pick up a heavy bag of dog food.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? But the strategy is the same. And then what I invite folks to do is once they learn that strategy, if they are working at their desk, which a lot of my clients do work at a desk most of the day, then every once in a while, just not like notice, how am I breathing or am I breathing? Because a lot of people, when we're working on the computer and we're focusing on the computer, we barely breathe. So if you can notice, maybe I haven't been breathing well, and you just take a few slow, deep breaths right there at your computer. You don't have to do that the whole time. You just do a few of them to kind of oxygenate. You'll start to feel better. You'll start to feel a little more awake.
Yep.
And then you can get back to work. But it's nice to have that little notion that every once in a while, you know, just notice, am I breathing?
Yep.
Let me take that big deep breath.
Or blinking your eyes, especially on the computer. People just sit there like this. They're not blinking.
Yes, because they're taking in all that information.
Exactly.
And, you know, studies have shown, you've probably seen this too, that because you're taking in all this information through your eyes, your brain is working extra hard. It's burning a lot of calories to take in all that information.
Right.
And so what your nervous system does is it dampens your breathing, so that you can conserve calories to take in all that information through your eyes. It's one of those ways where your body's trying to hack the system a little bit. It's like, that's not necessarily good for us, but you can appreciate the effort. I mean, it's trying to help you out.
Well, that, I mean, I have a sit stand desk and sometimes I'm doing this. I know what my body feels like right now. I can feel it's not numbness or anything. I just go, you need to stand. And sometimes I'll do it. I forget to tell the person I'm interviewing, but nobody says anything. But for me, I can easily grab my guitar and start singing. I can go play my piano and start drinking. I can play my drums in the middle of the day. And
that's perfect because you can shake it all up.
I can shake it all up. But you were talking about the pelvic floor. So there's an exercise, which I have no idea what it's called. But I'm on the ground on my pad my exercise pad, and it's like she says, now leave everything go, like you're going to the bathroom, relax the pelvic floor, and it's interesting because she mentions that all the time and many other things. So she says it called, we're doing certain exercise, no poofing. So it's like, because instead of holding the stomach in, I need to put the spine down, then hold the stomach. There's all these little tiny things that help you understand. And we're talking about different things with that could be wrong. One of the things that my wife and I had where there was foodstuffs that were not working with us. This is going back a number of years ago. We don't eat any wheat anymore. We don't eat a lot of bread. The one that's not wheat bread kind of tastes like paper, but some of it's okay now. It's a little bit better. And we've eliminated certain things like, we'll drink goat milk instead of this. And we're not being like any certain way. It didn't work. And we had to go through different tests. This is before we even did Pilates. So there's all these things, like Amanda went through these things, much more painful than most people experience, but she still went through that and she came out ahead of the game. So you were also mentioning something earlier about worry and fear. I'm not a big fan of all the words we use, anxiety, stress, and all this. It's like, here's your job description. I'm an engineer. I'm a manager. Stress. It's just a word. So one of the things I do is I call it, and when something happens that goes wrong, whatever that is, fill in the blank, I call it spiritually guided detours, because it now takes it away. Because I'm teach people how to get into the spiritual side of the subconscious imaginational mind, not using that conscious mind. And conscious mind is just, you have the prostate problem. You're never going to get on a bike. You're never blah, 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 blah. So either I use words specifically. I have a spiritually guided detour. Something like, well, what can I learn from this? What can I get out of this? What? And I ask God and I do my prayer meditation. I ask the spirit guide and the spirit guide gives the three angels of serendipity, accident, coincidence. Then it leads to discovery, awakening, transformation, all this different stuff. And this is the way I do. And this is the way I'm teaching. You can do whatever you want, but it's something that's very mindful and activating those two things, the health club of the mind and the health club of the body, and doing little things at a little bit at a time. That's all that Amanda is saying. When you're more interested in getting the trophy and not enjoying the journey to the trophy, you're losing everything. And when you get to that trophy, it's like, it's kind of like because I got an MBA as an adult. And it's like, I was like, is this all the paper is? But I really had a good time, as opposed to a younger person getting it. Understand, I'm going to go party. I'm going to do this. I want the journey enjoyed. I want it to take time, because this is not something that you want to do once in a while. You need to incorporate this into your life. And when you start seeing those tiny little bit of changes, it could be as simple as getting out of the bed in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, that your hip was clicking, whatever is going on in your body. And then you're like, you notice how, and I'm sure the audience can too. You know how you have a problem and then suddenly it goes away until somebody goes, hey, Amanda, you remember that problem? I go, oh yeah, you're right. I don't have it anymore.
I love hearing those stories when people will tell me that, their husband said, hey, I've noticed that you're walking better and I haven't heard you complain about your back, or, they'll bring something like that to their awareness that they forgot that they weren't having pain. And then it was like, oh my gosh, how long has this been going on?
Yes.
And it's very exciting. So some people really need someone else to comment on, hey, you're moving differently. When did this start? And then other times people bring those stories in. One of my favorites is, and it's happened to me, oh gosh, it probably happens to me a few times a year, where I'll get a new client that comes in and they're very guarded and they're very closed, and their whole posture and demeanor is closed. You know what I mean? Like their head's down, their shoulders are rounded. They're
body language.
Falling. Yeah, everything about them is like kind of unhappy, stressed. And I think to myself, oh boy, this is going to be tough. And so I always try to meet them with whatever energy level is needed to not you know, bowl them over, but I also don't want to make them keep going down, right? So I tried to sort of level it up. And then inevitably, and this is my favorite part, probably by week three, at least by week four, that same human being walks through my door with their head up and their chin up and their shoulders back and a big grin on their face. And they're not even talking about their back. They're telling me about what they did last weekend or their grandchildren or their children or whatever it is that is like lighting their world on fire right now. They're not even talking about their back and they don't even realize it, you know? No. And I'm just sitting here like, yeah, because I realize what's happening, right? They're transforming. Yes. It's so amazing. Like, I just love those moments. It's so cool.
I do now. Once a month, I do at the health club here, Good Samaritan Hospital here, and they have a Good Sam Health Club. And I do my mindful immersive system. And now I included, now this is my second meditation class. But last week I did my regular class and somebody came up. She was an older woman. I don't know, 70s, maybe 80s. I don't know. She goes, you know, normally I don't like driving at night. And something told me to come to this class because I'm talking about you're here for a reason and all this because it's spiritually based. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'm so glad I came and made a huge difference in my life. I'm going to keep attending and I really appreciate it. And I walked away. I'm like, I still get in chills. And it's those little things. Cause I had two other people wanted to come up to me. Hey, talked about this last week. And now this is we're talking about breathing. So with the first meditation class, somebody at the end of the meditation class said, I was expecting you just to teach breathing, but I'm glad what you did. What I did is if you want this just pure meditation, I can go, okay, everybody sit down, do this. Breathe out of your nose, breathe out of your mouth. Okay, have a good day. I want to understand the mind, understand what the system I've developed and have this work for you in a certain way so you can use this when you're not here. I don't want you to just learn how to breathe. I don't want you to learn how to do certain, you got to learn where it's coming from. You got to have something to use with you, a process, a procedure. So it's so important. So I'm going to say, call Amanda, talk to her. If you've got a little bit of something going on, she's a consultant. She knows, go to her website, go to everything, take a look at it. She can do this stuff. She's learned through the electronic system to be able to do this in a way that you don't have to spend $10,000. You don't need to do this stuff. You know, my Pilates instructor says you do the hundreds. You know, sometimes I get to the 25s. I don't do 100. Right. It doesn't matter. It was a little hip exercise that she told us to do. I can't show it. Nobody will figure it out, but like push your hips to one side, then you do go back and then you push your hips to the other and go, I'm doing it here with the microphone, but I do that before I get on the bike. And she goes, you don't have to go through all this. You don't have to spend a half an hour stretching or do whatever, but it kind of loosens things up because you're stiff during the night. So there's just little things that you suddenly become consciously aware of that you thought you had to live with. And as long as you've gone through the proper procedures that Amanda was saying, go get your imaging, go to the doctor, get the physiologic, make sure that, as my mom used to say, God forbid it's something bad, then you can deal with it.
Yeah, rule out anything bad, and then let's figure out what needs to happen next.
Bingo. Mm-hmm. Bingo. Okay, before we go, and of course, I didn't get to any of my questions, which is good. We'll have to have you on for another week. We can go on all different roads with this. This is such a cool subject.
Totally. I love it.
Because I just love talking to everybody because there's so many how you consciously communicate. It doesn't matter. You can be making a cookie. How do you make somebody feel better? How are you communicating to the world in a positive way? So let's think of something that you can leave, a positive aphorism with the audience saying, oh, that's a good thing. I like that. I'm going to just think about that you can leave with the audience before we end the show today.
Oh, you didn't even prep me that you were going to do that.
Surprise, as Gomer Pyle used to say, God, am I showing my age?
Yeah,
it can be anything. It can be anything. It can be little, big. It can be a story. It doesn't matter.
I'm going to leave the audience with a question.
There you go.
And this is going to be a little bit vague, but the question is, how can you move differently today? So I'm going to give you a little bit of a background on that. And the background is this, you know, if you've ever done a diet recall, you know, the thing, a diet diary where you write down everything you ate in a day or everything you ate for 3 days or something, you can do something similar with movement, right? So what types of movements do you do in a typical day? You know, everything from taking your shower to brushing your teeth, getting dressed for work, sitting in the car, getting in and out of the car, right? shaving if you shave, all the things that we do in a day. Take kind of an inventory, and it could be very informal. You can sit down with a notebook and paper and sort of write down basically what you do in a given day. And then what are the movements that are missing? And I'll give you a hint, like in a lot of cases, it's things like reaching up. Like, how often do you get a chance to reach overhead in a day? Like, a lot of people have kind of engineered that one out of the mix. What about being on all fours and like supporting your body weight on your hands? Like, I don't know many people that have a reason to do that or crawled around on the floor a little bit. I know it sounds weird, but how many times a day do you get to practice something like that? So think about like what movements are missing. You know, like you mentioned, you can do this, what I think of as a deep knee bend now to close that dishwasher door.
Yeah.
So a lot of people would think, oh my gosh, I could never do that. But it took you some time, but you worked up to it, didn't you?
Oh yeah.
So you might start with being on all fours, and then you start by pushing yourself back onto your heels a little bit from all fours, right? You can learn how to do that movement in little bits and pieces, but it starts with what movements am I missing? So where can I move differently today? Just a fun question to let people puzzle over.
That's perfect. There's no right or wrong answer when I ask people that, because I've caught people off guard. I'm like, ooh, I'm like, that doesn't have to be big philosophical stuff. A question is because I want people to take away something that they can go, oh, I didn't think about that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because a year and a half ago or whatever, I'm not tracking it on a calendar, I could never have done those deep knee bends as you're talking about.
Yeah.
And I can't stay there forever, but I could 5 years ago, 3 years, I couldn't do that. I couldn't do that. And now I'm more comfortable. I accidentally bent over, you know, a curve on my back, and I'm like, oh, that feels weird. So
doesn't feel good.
And it's good because be more flexible. Don't be stiff. Mm-hmm. Don't have to be a stiff board. You know, one of my things was, you're talking about simple things of noticing. How do you get out of a restaurant chair? When we're done with this thing, I got to stand up. So I'm going to stand up. How am I going to? I'm going to bring my table up. I'm going to activate my abs. I'm going to make sure I have my ankles. It's a whole. Now, people are going, well, that's too much work. After a while, you're not thinking about it.
No, but you do have to relearn how to do it in a way that doesn't hurt your body.
Bingo. And that's it. Yeah. Amanda, I want to thank you very much for being on the show. You definitely have to come back sometime because there's so many different roads we can go on.
Yeah.
Thank you for being at it. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Philip.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And remember, it is more important to express your thinking thoughts. That's what we've been talking about today. Not the noise and not those thoughts you are thinking. You can't do it. You can't do it. That is what is called conscious communication. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Conscious Communication. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and recommend on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcast. You can also get more great information at ConsciousCommunicationPodcast.com.